Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, Meseches Becharis Daf Vav. We are on Vav and Aleph, actually around 20 lines off the top. We start with a new question which really relates to the Mishnah which we cited yesterday. So the Mishnah was the first piece right after our Mishnah, so the Mishnah was brought in the Gemara. Tanan Hassam, right? We had that quote from a Mishnah. This is back on the famous base. Tanan Hassam, we have Rachel Shiyoldim in Eiz, Ve'ez Shiyoldim in Rachel, Potem Nabuchira. So the story was that a kosher animal, a Rachel, a sheep, gave birth to a goat looking offspring. Or exactly the opposite, a goat gave birth to a sheep. Halacha is, it's exempt, even though it's a firstborn animal. Kosher firstborn is typically kadosh, it's a bechor. In this case, it's not. It's called nidme. It appears like something else. This, totally dissimilar to its mother, it is exempt from kedushas bechor. Doesn't have bechor status. However, in the same Mishnah, it added, v'yemyesh b'miktza simonin chayav. If it somewhat does resemble its mother, so even miktza's partial resemblance is enough to consider it as a bechor. Now comes the question, Yiboilu. The members of the yeshiva had a question on this. So you speak of a sheep giving birth to a goat, vice versa. Let's say para sheyoldim in chamor. Okay, a para, a cow, kosher animal, gave birth to something which looks like a donkey. However, this strange looking offspring does resemble somewhat its mother, yesh by miktza simon. Now, what is the status of this firstborn offspring? Is it bechor or not? Shall we say? Yeah, by the AIDS, Shiyoldim in Rachel, the goat which bore a sheep, or V'Rachel, Shiyoldim in AIDS, the sheep which bore a goat. There we say, Dechayeshboi, Mikza Simon, and Chayavis bechor. If there is even a light resemblance to the mother, it is considered a bechor. You know why? Because to begin with, they're on equal turf. There is much to compare between the mother and the offspring. They're both kosher type animals. The ha tahira, va tahira. This is tahira. This is tahira. Ha kedushas haguf. The mother technically is part of a type, the kosher family, which can produce firstborns which have kedusha, inherent kedusha, kedusha saguf, which can be turned into a carbon. Kedusha saguf, likewise, the offspring is of the kosher type. So it has that element as well. As opposed to our story, where they're so different to begin with. In our case, where it's a cow giving birth to a donkey, they're so diametrically apart. This is a kosher, this is an unkosher type. Hokadush saguf, this could become inherently kadosh if it's a bechor, a kosher, type. Vokadush asdamim, whereas the offspring appears like a donkey, and a donkey at most can become kadosh asdamim, monetarily designated if in fact it's a firstborn donkey, but it could ever rise to the level of inherent kedusha. It can't be a carbon for the mizbeach, so perhaps. This slight similarity between them is not enough to connect them because they're so far apart to begin with. Or you can say, no, the resemblance is enough to connect them. Kivan, the Eid of Bnei Mikdash B'chira, since ultimately, whether you're a cow, which generates firstborns that are karbonis, whether you're a donkey, which generates firstborns which are meant for the kohen, but ultimately, they're both labeled as B'chir, so there is that common denominator, Kadosh, therefore this similarity in appearance does connect it to the mother, and therefore it should have kedushas bechor. Now, if you'll adopt this, second approach, that it's enough to connect them. Kivan the idividi bnei mikdash bechor, since they both have potential to become bechor each in its own way, kadosh. So now, since they resemble each other, there's kedusha. What about a chamor shiyoldo kimin sus? Shift to another case. You have a donkey giving birth to a horse. Mao, what happens here if the horse somewhat resembles the mother? what's the status of the offspring? If it's a firstborn, is it considered like a donkey and it has the mitzvah petach hamor or not? Mo, what happens? Hocha vaday lav migdash lav bas migdash b'pcherehu. Here you can argue that the horse is of a family that has no kedushas b'cher whatsoever, right? Because b'cher is limited to either kosher types at the higher level of b'cher could turn into a carbon, or of a chamar. But we rule out horses and camels as discussed yesterday. So perhaps he's so different than the mother. And even though he somewhat resembles the mother, he's his own person. He's his own entity, and he doesn't have a kedushas b'chor. Lav midrash b'chor hu oidilmo, or you can say kivan de mintmeihu kadosh, since ultimately they're both of the non-kosher type. There is some sort of connection. That's enough. In Tzilam, if you'll adopt the second approach, kivan de mintmeihu kadosh, since they're both of the non-kosher variety, so that's enough similarity to connect him. Here comes the third case: para shiyoda min sus. Cow gives birth to a horse. Mal. This is the most extreme case of all. Because hachavada here, certainly, there's so much setting them apart. Hachavada ha toira v'tzmeya. Right? This is kosher, this is not kosher. Ha bas migdash b'chayro, v'olav bas migdash b'chayro. The cow is bas migdash b'chayro. It can potentially turn into a b'chayro if it's firstborn, but the horse has no relevance, no relation to b'chayro at all. Or then what you can say, look, ultimately, in terms of their appearance, that's what counts, that's what determines. They appear similar, they connect. Or then with Simon and Milsi, the Simon factor is what determines. Okay, so we have three cases. A pearl gives birth to a chamor. We have chamor to a sus, and we have a pearl to a sus. Toshma, here comes a raya from a braisa. Toshma, behemoth tohir shi'odah min tmeya. Kosher animal, give birth to a non-kosher. Turun ha-b'chera, even though it's a firstborn, no b'chera status to it. However, if there's some similarity in appearance, im yesh b'mitzah simon, chayves b'chera. My love, now let's assume it even relates to that third case. I feel a parah, even a cow, shi'odah min sus, gives birth to a horse. No. Parah shi'odah min chamar is referring to the first case, the first of the three, which is the most simple. Most straightforward. It's a par giving birth to a chamar. There's a lot in common there. And therefore, mitzah simonin does the trick. But in the case of a par giving birth to a sus, so diametrically opposed, it's so different, and perhaps it doesn't work. Tashmai comes another attempt at a riot. Par shiodom in chamar. Cow giving birth to a chamar. V'chamar shiodom in sus. A horse coming out of a donkey. Turim in abchayra. Since they are dissimilar, it's exempt, but there's some resemblance. So, my love, perhaps, right? Seemingly, this halacha, that partial resemblance suffices, refers back to both cases. So, we see at least in the case of paro giving birth to chamor or chamor giving birth to sus, which are the first and second examples that we cited. We see that mitzah simanin does the trick. Lo, I know, a par shield with chamar. Perhaps it's only going back in the first case, par with a chamar, where there's a lot of connectivity. But in the second case, where there's additional elements of dissimilarity, perhaps there, the partial appearance doesn't help. Aval chamar shield min sus wouldn't work. Oh, says the Gemara, what do you mean? Aval chamar shield min sus l'mag tana. So what's the point of the braisa, even mentioning that second case? It has no relevance. Liftura. To exempt it, if there's even partial similarity, it's exempt. Well, pshita. Meaning, no. The Torah means that if they're this totally dissimilar, right? The braisa began. So if the offspring is totally looking different than the mother, it's exempt. Is that why the braisa cited the second case as well? So chamor gave birth to a sus, and it looks so different. It's exempt. Pshita, obviously. Obviously. Absolute dissimilarity in the second case would set them apart. If it sets them apart in the first case where there is already pre-existing similarity, we say, well, they look so different, they're apart. Certainly the second case were to begin with. They're far apart. Hash to look now, Uma Parash Yodim Chamor, even in that first case, where it's a cow giving birth to Chamor, where there is commonality, they both have relevance to Bukhar. Amrish, you say, Well, the Miyesh B'mikta someone in, if they're somewhat resemblance, okay. If you loy loy, but otherwise not. They're exempt. Certainly the Chamar, Sheldon Mitzus, a horse giving birth to a donkey giving birth to a horse, where they're so far apart to begin with, as we explained before. It's obvious. It goes without saying. What do you have to even mention? That if they don't look alike, there's no chiv abchor. Istrich, no. You can argue and say that there is a point in mentioning it. It's not so simple. Saka daitach. I mean, perhaps I can propose that, there is bachar in this case, even though they look so dissimilar. Why hasam? In the first case, where it's a cow to a donkey, hasam hudiyesh lo karnayim, v'en lo karnayim. You know why? Because the para has no the para has horns in their physical appearance, right? There's a very strong element which sets them apart, the horns. The cow has horns, but in the karnayim, the donkey has no horns. Furthermore, ha parsa says stukais. The cow has split hooves, but not the donkey. His hooves are, her hooves are joined and not split. So we have many factors which set them apart. And therefore I would say, okay, if they don't look alike, then there's no bukhar. But in the second case where it's a donkey birthing a horse, where we don't have all these separating factors. The both of them, Eno Karnaim, have no horns. Idividi Parsasel Klutis, both of their hooves are joined. There I can argue and say, okay, he gave birth to something which looks like a horse. It looks like a reddish tinge. He looks like a horse. Ema Chamar Adam Ba'amu. Okay, it's a new version of a donkey. It's a red donkey. That's what I would think. So even though they look so dissimilar, Kamash Malon comes to Bryce and says, no. Even here, if he's a Nidma, if he appears different than his mother, he is potter from Bukhar. So bottom line is like this. We have the halacha that if the offspring is a Nidma, he appears like something different than the mother, he's exempt from Bukhar. This applies to Bukhar Behemah Torah, applies to Bet HaChamor. But if there's Miksa Simon, if there's somewhat resemblance in their appearance, then it's Chayiv and Bukhar. So the Mishnah mentioned Rachel giving birth to an Eiz and vice versa. But what if it's Paro giving birth to a Chamor? What if it's a Chamor giving birth to a Sus? And furthermore, a Paro giving birth to a Sus. So we haven't really resolved cases 2 and 3. Umayin Ba'achil. So getting back to the Mishnah, where we have kosher animal birthing something which appears non-kosher and vice versa, what's its status regarding consumption? It's all about the source, right? And the Mishnah concludes with a recap, shehayotze minatamitami, because something which emerges, something which was produced by non-kosher is non-kosher, and vice versa, vayotze minatar, something which emerges from a Torah source is tar. Sounds like a duplication. I mean, the Mishnah already mentioned the difference between, right? It's all about the source. Why does the Mishnah have to bother recapping it with this formula? Shayotze, etc., etc. Simon Abahamu, just a good way to remember. The Leticha Flach, you shouldn't confuse matters. Leitem, you shouldn't even have the notion to say Zulba straight today. Focus on the actual product rather than the source. Vaitar Malyu. He looks kosher. Vaitame Malyu, and the other one looks Tame. No, you look at the source. El Zulba Salima, you look at the mother. And that's what determines its status. But now, I mean, how do we know? The source is what determines the offspring's status. Tanu Rabbanu, we have a brice. Pasuk says, "Ach ezet le'toichlu." However, these you should not eat, despite exhibiting some features of kosher. Emalia gera, umafrisa parso. And the Mishnah continues. The pasuk goes on to list a camel, etc., etc. So even though he has some kosher features, he chews his cud, he's not kosher. Now, the beginning of the pasuk seems to be referring to something else, aside from the camel, etc., that are being discussed later in the pasuk. Achas alitogel shouldn't be eating, even if an animal exhibits all kosher signs. Mimali agiru, umafrisi aparsa. How could that be? Look, he looks kosher. He has all the signs. Why is he? The pasuk is teaching us that there is an except. Sometimes you can have something which appears kosher, kosher mahadran, on all fronts, but it's not kosher. Why? Because he emerged from a non-kosher source. We learned Yesh Lecha Shumah LaGeru Umafris Parsa. You can have an animal who chooses cuds, split hooves, and still, you can't consume him. Who is that one? Tahir, kosher looking animal, Shinod Me'atayim, born from a non-kosher. So clearly it's all about the source. Well, hold it. Perhaps not. Perhaps the Pasuk is saying just the opposite. That something which appears non-kosher will be labeled as non-kosher despite being born from a kosher source. Umay, so what then does the pasuk mean? Mimali agera, umimafirisi aparas. So what's the pasuk teaching us? We turn to our base. Hachi kamar. Pasuk teaching us just the opposite. It's talking about something which emerged from Hachikamer davar haba mimali agiru umimafrisi aparas loytekel. You shouldn't even eat something which came from a fully kosher source, because he appears non-kosher. So perhaps it's about him, not about the source. Just the opposite of what we're thinking. Tamar leimar. We have another pasuk. The pasuk continues and says, "Well, gomel, right? You can't have the camel despite the fact that he chooses scuds." And the pasuk concludes with tamehu, gomel tamehu. To teach us that only a standard gomel, Rashi says, is a camel born from a camel, right? So only that one is tummy. Who tummy? He's unkosher. Why? Because he came from an unkosher source. But vain tummy hanil not Torah tummy, but a tummy which came from a Torah is okay because it's all about the source. El Torah rather is considered kosher. Rabbi Shimon, disagrees. He says that actually it's also about what he looks like. So if he's appearing like a camel, he's not kosher despite having come from a cow. Reb Shimon Omer, it says gomel twice. It says it once over here by Yikram, once in Dvarim. Gomel twice, shnei pamim. One is echad, one is a standard, the camel, coming from a camel, gomel hanoled ma gomela. The second one is gomel that was born from a cow, hanoled ma para. And since he has the simonim of a camel, right, doesn't have the kosher signs, so despite his kosher origins, he is labeled as a tamei rabban. What do rabban do with this repetition? Hi gomel yavdli chad. One is lesser atzmai to disallow consumption of the actual camel that came from a camel. One is to keep away from its milk. Milk of a camel is also. But Rabbi Shimon, has Rabbi Shimon to forbid the milk of a camel? Because he already used the pasuk for something else. Pasuk says S is an extra word to cover even the milk. Rabbanan do not expound on the word S. It's just a mode of, you know, expression. S this, S that. It's not trying to teach us a new halacha, the signs we find elsewhere. That was a Tana who did not expound on the S. Tana Shimon Hamsuni. Okay, so the Tana Shimon Hamsuni spent a long time, much effort, much toil in deriving and expounding on the deeper meaning of every word S in the Torah and the lesson embedded therein. Hayudayesh kol S v'esha b'Torah. Right? V'afta eseshon l'kecha. Right? Etc. etc. Kivon sheigia. When he got to a certain pasuk, he backed off. Pasuk says, "Less Hashem lekechatir." Meant to have awe, develop awe, and a feeling of yira. Just by contemplating the magnitude of Kaviyachol Hashem, source of all existence, creating all the worlds with all within them. So the pasuk adds the word S What's S coming to add? How could you add something to Hashem's level of... Right? Hashem, the awe of Hashem surpasses anything and everything. Nothing can be put on that same plane. Pirish. See, backed off. He says, look, evidently, just like this S is not coming to add, likewise, all the times that it says S natura, it's just a mode of expression. Amr le Talmidim, Talmidim turned to him, he says, what about all those years of effort? Rebbe, kol esen shederash, all the essence that you were derish, matay alein, what happens to that? Amr le Talmidim, he says, not to worry, Hashem will reward me. Geshem shekibalti ischar al adrish, just like I got, I will get rewarded for all the work, all the learning. Likewise, I get rewarded for backing off. Until Rekiva came along and he deferred, he says, no, there is a meaning to it. Chachamim were saturated with Chachmas Hashem, a deserving of the similar deference. The Yira of Hashem expands and extends over to Talmid Chachamim. Interestingly, Tesis, which is actually brought on the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph, he says, what was the issue here? What was the back and forth? Shimon HaMsuni did not want to equate Moira of Talmud Chacham to Moira of Hashem. He says, you can't put them on the same. And Rabbi Akiva did. He was Moira of Talmud Chachamim, as we learn in Pirkei Avos, it's not Moira Rabbach Moira Shemaim. The Moira of a Rebbe is equated to the Moira of Heaven of Moira of Hashem. Explaining to Marshall, what was the back and forth? So Rabbi Akiva understood that really you can't equate. I mean, you can't equate the awe for a Talmud Chacham. But he says it's not a contradiction because the kavod and the respect and the way you relate to a Talmud Chacham is unrelated to the person as a person and his personal accomplishment. It's not personal. It's because he is enmeshed, so to speak, with his Torah, which is Hashem's expression, Hashem's Chachmah. He's tafel to Hashem. It's like, you know, butter on the bread. You don't make a bracha on the butter. Once you make a bracha on the bread, it's tafel. It's subordinate. It's connected. It fuses, right? Within the greater entity, Talmud Chacham is fused with Hashem as the greater entity, which sort of encompasses it, encompasses Talmud Chacham and his Torah. Hence, it's not a contradiction. It's not an affront, chas v'shalom. It's not a lack of respect, a lack of appreciation, chas v'shalom. It's the opposite. The Talmud Chacham is enmeshed in Hashem's Chachma. So when you respect and you have yira for the Talmud Chacham, it's on account of the godliness that's embedded within him and his tveikus b'Hashem connecting and fusing with his source, which is Hashem, source of all existence. So according to Rekiva, it was not a stir, it wasn't a kasha. It worked very well. Es Hashem al-Kachatir, just like you have Yira for Hashem, it's as anything which is subordinate to Hashem is deserving of a similar approach. So, Shimon HaMsuni, on the other hand, who didn't have this, didn't adopt this perspective, he backed off. And Farshim explained that actually, that's what he meant when he says, I get Tzchar ala Prisha. Why did he hesitate? He didn't want to equate the two. Right? The Yira of Hashem is in a totally different plane. So really, it's a fulfillment of the highest level of Es Hashem al-Kechatira that he refused to even entertain, connecting the Yira of Talmud Chacham to Yira of Hashem, etc. So when he says, I got Tzchar al-Prisha, what he meant to say is that my sacrifice, my giving up all my years of research and all that, it's coming about through an expression now of Yiras Hashem of the highest degree. So it wasn't a negative that he was giving it up. This was a realization. This was a clarity that he arrived at, that he couldn't equate anything to Yiras Hashem. So it's an expression of the mitzvah of Es Hashem l'kechatira. But ultimately, Rabbi Akiva held that you could relate to the pasuk to Talmud Chacham without creating a contradiction. It's compatible and it works. In any case, back to our story. Es HaGomel, according to Rabbi Shimon, the S is covering the milk of the gomel, which is off limits, according to Rabbanon, who already used the double gomel for that, Esim Loidarshi. Says the Gemara, Omer Rav Acha Beid Rav Rav Ash. I have a question. So how do we know camel's milk is off limits? Because of the double gomel, according to Rabbi Shimon, or because of according to Rabbanon, according to Rabbi Shimon, the S, right? Elamiyat. That's the case. Look, time of the Rabbanon, mi gomel gomel. Rabbanon are based on the double gomel to forbid camel's milk. Rabbi Shimon from mi es hagomel. Halavachi, but if not for that pasuk, I mean, I would think you can drink camel's milk. Why? Cholav the behemoth may assure you can drink a non-kosher animal's milk. Why would you say so? Why is it different than the brice? The sanya atmeim, the extra word atmeim by the creatures, the esot tziron v'roit from the kibush lem, to cover the brine and the juice and all that. So you see, anything extracted from a non-kosher source, of course, is asr. And the milk of a camel as well. Itzrach, no, there's a need for a pasuk by a camel, especially why? Perhaps I can think, hoyel the behemot toyer namechidushu. Truthfully, how do we even know that milk of a kosher animal is okay? The truth is, it's a chiddush. It's an anomaly. Something unusual. Why? Dam Rama, as we learned elsewhere, dam nek av nasa cholov. Milk is really transformed blood. So this term relates to the woman, an isha, while she's nursing, she's typically free of dam of nida, because that blood sort of gets converted into cholov, which is fed to the baby. So we keep in the chiddushu. So since it's something so unusual, the Torah is making such an exception. Could you imagine you're basically drinking blood in a different form? Okay, so since the Torah gives it special status, despite its problematic origin, it's considered like a new entity in its tohar. Behemet mei enam milishter. So perhaps a similar concept can be applied to a non-kosher animal. Milk is a new entity, despite its unkosher origin. That's what I would think, Kamash Malon. That's what requires a new pasuk to forbid milk of a non-kosher animal. Well, that's only if you work with the notion that, you know, blood was converted into milk, dam nekem nasal chalap, so then you have your whole build-up. El man da'amar, but according to the other approach there in the Gemara Nida, the reason why a woman doesn't have dam nida through the nursing period is because a spark in a man, her body structure sort of gets weakened and her nefesh, her full life force, which is expressed with a dam, isn't really fully restored until she's finished nursing at the Esrim Rabar Chodesh. So according to this approach, we don't find that the blood turned into milk. So Michael Amemers, then your whole basis is sort of gone. So then, back to the question. Why would I even think to allow camel's milk? Istrich, there's a need for a pasuk. I would think it's okay. Why? Salgadaitach. I mean, perhaps I can say. There's really another issue with milk, even of a cow. It's like Eber Menachai. It's something flowing out of a live animal. We don't find elsewhere something produced by a live animal, Vishai Rachmana, the Torah should allow. Eber Menachai is also, Basa Menachai is also. So why is milk even allowed? My chol of this milk coming off a live animal, ki aver menachai, was like a limb of a live animal, v'shari, and still it's okay. How do we know it's okay, by the way? We'll see later in the morning. We need a proof of that too, but okay, let's assume it's okay. So once it's okay, despite its problematic, you know, origin, vilkan, therefore, perhaps I can apply the same etta to a non-kosher setting as well. I mean, what's the difference? If it's a new entity, it's disconnected from its source, doesn't relate, doesn't identify with its source. Even a camel's milk should be okay. Kamash one, that's what we need a pasuk to disallow it. Now comes the big question. The cholav to behemoth terminal. How do we even know? Milk of a kosher animal, is the shari is okay. Ilema. But the asr achmona basa b'cholav. Okay, very simple response. If milk on its own is forbidden, why does the Torah have to bother introducing a new isra of, well, you can't eat milk and meat together? Well, the milk is asr to begin with. You can infer from that. Yeah, only the milk is the mix is a problem, but independently they're okay. That's a right, that milk is okay. From the fact that the Torah forbids basar b'chalav, a apparently halu chodei shari, apparently each item on its own, milk on its own is okay. Well, no, not so quick. Ve'im halu chodei also brachila, perhaps milk on its own, you can't eat. You can't eat, but mutamarna, you could have benefit from it. But when it mixes with meat, you can't even have anah. Maybe that's all that happens. Basa b'chal b'anah nam yasra. Ul Rav Shimon, now according to Rav Shimon, the Shari b'anah, who says, basa b'chal is mutar b'anah. So back to the question. So what's unique about basa b'chal if chal of itself is asra? There's no isra anah, even once it's mixed. Mishkachas al milk yal bishulay. Perhaps the add-on of basa b'chal is that you not allowed to cook it together. You get malkas if you cook it together. So once again, perhaps milk really is forbidden. Period. The added element of basa b'chalav is that if you merely cook them together, you get malkas. So back to the question, how do we know that milk is okay? Ela medigal rachmano bipsula mikdashim. Rather, it's because the pasuk, in speaking about disqualified karbanos that got a blemish, right? It says, look, tizbach, you can shecht and eat it. Like gizi, you can share it. Basa b'chalav, you can eat the meat but not the milk. So we can apply the milk of this one is off limits, hadachul and shari, but the milk of a regular animal is okay. Oh, ve'ema, perhaps you can say, dechul and asr b'achilu, milk of a regular cow is asr to drink. V'shari b'ano, you can have benefit from it, you can sell it to a guy. Dechachim b'ano nami asr. And when the pasuk forbade the milk of the psula mikdashim, it's to take it to the next level, you can even have benefit from it. So perhaps really milk, even of a kosher animal, is asr. Eller, here comes the attempt number 2. V'dechsiv, v'dei chelev cholav isim lachmecha, lechem be'secha, v'chan o'secha, the pasuk of Mishlei instructs a man to go seek livelihood, go get yourself goats, go get milk, go get right for your family. Apparently, goat's milk is okay. Oh, but the milk is clear, perhaps it's for commercial purposes. Teaching us to, put together a source of livelihood, but you're not going to consume the milk. Eller, v'dechsiv, rather from the pasuk, where David was instructed to bring his brothers, bring his aseres chaitz chritzi achalav, go bring the 10 blocks of cheese. Apparently, cheese products are okay. But the Moschera, perhaps again, it was for commercial purposes, to sell and to earn money. Well, he was taken out to the battlefield. That's not a place to do business. Ato darkish al mochama, the Moschera, you see, it's a place of mochama. Is that where you do Moschera? Apparently, it's for personal consumption. And apparently, milk products are okay. We have another source. How does the Torah describe Eretz Yisrael with its great blessings? A land flowing milk and honey. Eretz Zalos Chol V'Dvash. V'Loi D'Shar, if the milk was not okay for use, Mishtabach Lam Krav V'Midloi Chol, the Torah would praise Eretz Yisrael with something which is not suitable. Third pshat, V'Loi Yisrael Mihachav, another pshat. L'chus Shibur V'Kesav V'Loi V'Chir Yayin V'Cholav. Go eat and go enjoy the wine and milk. Okay, so apparently milk is okay. Shoo. Okay, so we know kosher milk is okay, but milk of a non-kosher animal is asr. Either because of the S or because of the twice gomel. Ask the Gemara, if you're working with the duplication, elmiata, so what about other duplications? Shofen, shofen. It says it once in Vayikra, once in Dvarim. Arneves, arneves. Chazir, chazir. Lani yudasi? Lani yudasi? Why did the Torah repeat the those? That seems to be extra. We don't have the we don't really have a halacha to learn from it. Right? We already learned everything from Gomel Gomel. Why did the Torah repeat those again? It says the Gemara, look at the Sanya Elo. Look at the Sanya. It must be for the following reason. Because in Dvarim, we have some additional features, some additional items on the non-kosher list. And because of that, the Torah just repeats the entire list. Well, look at the Sanya. Lam nishtam behema. Why did the Torah repeat the list of non-kosher animals? To add the shesua animal to the list. That double, hunchbacked animal, okay, which was not discussed back in Vayikra. Va'ifes, why repeat the list of non-kosher birds? Maybe ra'ah, to add the ra'ah bird, which was not discussed earlier. Okay, so that explains why the Torah repeats itself. So now, hold it. So now, if you've given us a Once we've arrived at this simple explanation for the repetition, so then how does Reb Shimon learn from Gomel? I understand it's repetition, but perhaps it's not considered repetition because it's just, you know, part of the list, which needed to be rediscussed because of the added features. Gomel, namelach also. Maybe the Gomel is also for this reason. Says the Gemara, yeah, but kalechadikun midrash tashina. For stuff, we just say, look, it came on account of the general list, but if there's something to learn from it, such as in this case, we have a plausible halacha to be learned from the duplication, so we prefer going that route and apply it for that matter. Okay. So bottom line, we have a nidme, halacha of nidme. If the offspring is totally looking different than the mother, it's exempt from bechor. If there's mikzah, siman, and tzchayef, and the Gemara explore different possibilities and was wondering to what extent we apply this halacha of mikzah, siman, and tzchayef. The Mishnah we learn how yoytzim in ator ator, yoytzim in tamay tamay. Rav Shimon takes issue with yoytzim in ator ator. He says if it looks non-kosher, walks non-kosher, or talks non-kosher, it is non-kosher. And it's sourced on the duplication of gomel, and the Rabbanan use it for chalav of behemah tmeya because chalav of behemah tmeya is okay based on three sources. One of them is eretz zavas chalav dvash, and Rav Shimon learns the chalav of behemah tmeya from S, an extra S. In accordance with Rabbi Kiva's opinion that we darsh in the S, versus Rav Shimon HaMsuni, who let go of the S's and he says, Kireim shekibalti schar lat risha, kach ani mekal schar lat prisha. You know, interesting, it applies in all kinds of settings, this idea of mekabel schar lat prisha. Sometimes a person put an effort and, you know, try to achieve something in ruchnis or in gashmis, and you know, it's just not going, and you have to back up and say, look, Hashem wills it otherwise, and you get schar for that. It's an expression of amuna and commitment to Hashem. And Hashem shekibalti schar adrisha, yimakabel schar laprisha. Okay, maybe we zecha shmaya to know how to conduct ourselves in every situation. When to push along the drisha, when to back off and do the prisha. Slacha rabam suras tevis.